Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, this is Nick Perry and the Underground Thieves. Very interesting band. Liverpool need 19 more points from its remaining 9 games, and they'll break a record for total points set in the season of 100 by Manchester City. So this is certainly within reach for Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool, but the most important thing is they're looking to win. This is remarkable, their first English league title in 30 years. And remember, they are the defending champions in Europe. Tomorrow, Aston Villa, Sheffield United, the Blades, a great story, Manchester City and Arsenal. That's how we get back into the start of the Premier League. All right. To talk more about the Premier League, did an interview with Tyrone Marshall of the Manchester Evening News in Manchester, England.
Well, Tyrone, let's just start off with the anticipation of the Premier League coming back. We're 2 days away from it. Just kind of the thoughts of what's going on in England morale-wise with this league getting ready to rev up again.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement. It's been a long time. I was listening before actually to a podcast, and they mentioned that the last time the English league season had been stopped within the season was the war in 1939. So it has been completely unprecedented times. It's been bizarre and obviously sad circumstances. But after 3 months, I think there is a desire to get football back now. I think it's one of those things you don't really realise how much you miss it until it's gone, and it's something a lot of people sort of, almost uses a bit of structure to their lives, when the next games come in, the weekend involves football. So it's been missing, and well, it's a shame that fans won't be there and it'll be behind closed doors at the moment. I think people are just looking forward to being able to watch games on TV again.
Hey, senior football writer in a city like Manchester in the UK, it's a little bit of pressure. I mean, you have a lot to do in that city and that passionate football city that Manchester is. All right, so I want to just take you into, as a journalist, how has things changed for you during COVID-19? What have you learned?
You've learned that no matter how bleak things are, you always seem to pluck an idea from somewhere. It's been a very testing 3 months or so, journalistically. Obviously, we're used to writing about football in the season, and the season ends and the summer is kind of filled with the transfer window, and there's an endless stream of transfer stories and things you can do around transfer stories and things like that. But this has kind of been a time when there's been no football and no transfer stories because the transfer window's not open. No one knows when it's going to open, and no one knows quite how much is going to be available to spend. So it has been very unusual circumstances. It's been testing to kind of come up with 3 months worth of ideas of things to write about and opinion pieces to write about and new angles to come at stories from. So, yeah, I think the last sort of 6 weeks or so, I think everyone in the industry has been kind of itching to get back to games, and press conferences might be virtual and over Zoom at the moment, but I think people are just looking forward to having some quotes to work with and some actual football to write about, because it has been a very interesting time to be in the industry, definitely.
Tyrone Marshall, senior football writer, Manchester Evening News, joining us on ESPN. The reader these days, what do they want? Do they want opinion? Do they want straight hard news about the match? Do they want the transfer news? What, in your mind, is most important to the football reader these days?
I think opinion. I think they like a lot of opinion. There's, with the onset of websites these days, there is so much out there that you need to have kind of a different angle for it. But a club like Manchester United or Manchester City, there's always thirst for opinion and what people think about your club. Anything around a match does well for us, especially when teams are winning. When United are winning, like we saw before the lockdown when they went 11 games unbeaten. When they're winning, people will flock to our website and read stuff about matches that they've won. It makes a huge difference. Sort of quote stuff doesn't tend to do as well these days. It is more about kind of opinion pieces around the game and then opinion pieces around transfers and transfer news. Definitely, there is an insatiable thirst for transfer news. I think with every club, it's almost a market in itself these days, writing about transfers. It's as attractive and as popular as the games, and people just genuinely cannot get enough of transfer stories. And, you know, once you get a realistic sniff of a transfer, then anything you can do around that story, giving it a fresh angle, you know, people just, readers just can't get enough of it.
Well, Tyrone, you opened the door perfectly for me, because I want to go right into Paul Pogba and this whole dance that Manchester United has been doing with Paul. What do you think his future is? Because we hear he's been in the first team heading into the return of the Premier League.
He has, yeah. And I think there's certainly a fascination to see how his partnership with Bruno Fernandes will look in the short term over the next sort of 9 Premier League games and however many there are in the FA Cup and Europa League. Long term, it's difficult to know. I mean, his last sort of public statements on it were last summer when he said he wanted a fresh challenge, and he didn't get his move last summer, but he took that well, and he turned up for pre-season, and by all accounts, his attitude was exemplary in pre-season on the tour in Australia in the Far East. He really embraced it. So we're not aware. He's not said since that he's changed his mind and he's happy to stay. Whether he sees this unbeaten run and the signing of Fernandes as a sign that the club are heading in the right direction, then that might convince him. I think the biggest issue for him is there's just not going to be a market for him this summer. United aren't going to let him go for anything less than they paid for him, which was £89 million 4 years ago. They probably want £100 million or more. And I just don't think any clubs are in the position, really, to spend £100 million on transfers. Real Madrid and Juventus are his two most likely destinations in the two clubs he wants. But both of them have had financial issues during this. They've had to ask players to take pay cuts and pay deferrals and things like that. And I just don't think you can then, I mean, told players they're taking 30% pay cuts. I don't think you can then spend £100 million on a new player. I don't think that's going to go down well in the dressing room. It's not going to go down well at the club. So unless something changes, I don't see a market for him this summer. So whether he suddenly thinks that he's stuck at United, or he's happy to embrace his challenge here at United, or if it's just a temporary stay and they only get one more year out of him, who knows? But I think it's just difficult to see where he goes this summer in any kind of deal that suits United, and they're certainly not going to sell him on the cheap.
Is this a new norm with the transfer window? You said something very interesting there. Stuck at United. I'm not sure that's a very bad thing, but there could be worse places to be stuck, I guess. But, you know, do you think there are going to be players who are really going to be stalled and are going to have to make do where they are, who might have been really anticipating the chance to move?
I think so, yeah. I just, you know, the players, especially players on big money or would attract big fees, it's just difficult to see where the market is for them. There's obviously clubs that are going to spend. We've seen Chelsea in the Premier League have been quite aggressive recently. Manchester United want to spend, but sort of how they spend has probably changed. They would still like to sign Jadon Sancho, who would be their top target, but they don't anticipate spending more than £100 million for him. If they do sign him, then that's probably going to be it for the summer, whereas 4 or 5 months ago, they were looking at maybe 3 players. So there is going to be a change in how clubs do business, and it's going to affect players like Alexis Sanchez at United, who has been on loan at Inter Milan this year. You know, United don't want him. United want his wages off the book. He's on absolutely astronomical money and is given a very poor return for it in terms of what he's done at United. But he's 31. He'd have to take a major pay cut to find any club that would take him. And it's difficult to see any club that are going to pay him, you know, even half of what he's getting at United. So their only options really are maybe send him on loan again and pay most of his wages, where they're probably looking at £200,000 a week or more for a player who's not going to be there, or keep him and try and find a place in the squad for him. But players like Sanchez and Gareth Bale, maybe at Real Madrid, who are on huge money, I just think it's really difficult to see where they go unless they are willing to take massive pay cuts.
Tyrone Marshall, senior football writer at the Manchester Evening News. I actually got to read the hard copy of it when I visited Manchester at the end of November, December. So I just wanted to let you know that. How do you divvy up the paper and the inches when it comes to covering United and City? Because, you know, we do know how heated it all is.
It is, yeah, yeah. We normally have kind of a split back page. So there's a United story and a City story on the back page, unless there's something major going on. So obviously, Manchester City's UEFA ban and their appeal would take precedent when United sacked Mourinho, which obviously the back page story. But often there's a split there. Online, the coverage is pretty equal. We've got the same number of City and United writers. Then I do both. There's a few others who do both. So the coverage is generally pretty equal. But like you say, they are two big beasts fighting for attention in a regional paper. It is quite incredible to have a regional paper that that has two clubs of that size, you know, in terms of news, possibly the two biggest in England with everything going on at City and having Pep and now this ban. And obviously Manchester United sell worldwide. So it is probably the newsiest regional patch in England, that's for sure.
Are you neutral when it comes to the two clubs?
I am, yes, yeah, yeah. Although I live here now, I'm not from Manchester originally. I'm from a small town called Shrewsbury, so I support them.
Shrewsbury town.
Yeah, so I support them. They're in League One. So, yes, I'm very much neutral and down the middle when it comes to Manchester.
All right, so let's talk about the other good news. One of the positives out of COVID, people coming back from injury. Talk a little bit about Marcus Rashford and what you know about him.
Yeah, he's raring to go by all accounts. It's, like you say, one of the positives, if you can put it that way, is that he probably thought his season was over. He was touch and go to play in England European Championship if Euro 2020 had gone ahead. Whereas this has given him a chance to get back fit. He's been training fully since they returned to the training ground about a month ago now. He's played in the friendlies they've had, the inter-squad games and a couple of friendlies. And by all accounts, he is raring to go. He's had his best season yet for United. He's got 19 goals so far, and that includes 2 months out injured. He has been the player of the year, I would say, hands down at that club. And I think this gives him a chance to really finish with a flourish and maybe get towards 25 goals. And he's had an excellent season, and he's earned a lot of praise recently in this country as well for kind of the stuff he's done off the pitch during this crisis. He's raised more than 20 million for a charity that feeds children and replaces school meals. And, you know, he's really sort of showing a social responsibility in that regard, and has won a lot of praise for it. But it sounds like, from what we hear at the training ground, it sounds like he's raring to go as well, and is really chomping at the bit to get back involved.
Tyrone Marshall, Manchester Evening News. One more on Manchester United. How do you feel, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is now in the minds of the fans? Has he proven enough now? Has he steadied the ship, despite maybe some who in defense of him say, you know, his resources are limited, he's been using some younger players?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think the jury is probably still just about out. It was certainly beginning to turn before the season was suspended. They'd been unbeaten 11 games, and it wasn't just the results, it was the performances. That this was the best stretch of performances under him by a long, long way. They started to look like they had a real plan, like they knew how they were playing. And there was huge improvement there in that 11 games, both defensively and going forward. The challenge is that 11 games don't make a season. If they come back and they finish the season in the same form, then I think, you know, the jury will probably be in, and he'll get a much better shot at it. But there's certainly been doubts, and until then, you know, until the end of January, really. They lost to Burnley at Old Trafford in January, and they were dreadful then, and that was kind of the nadir, really, of his reign. And I don't think it's any exaggeration to say that if he wasn't who he was in terms of scoring that goal in the Champions League final in 99, or he'd done for United, I think any other manager would have been under huge pressure and probably sacked at the time. But they've shown a great belief in him. There are signs that he's certainly turned the corner. But I think the last 6 weeks, 2 months of the season now will tell us a lot more about how far the team can go as well.
American owners, the Glazers, still under the gun in Manchester. I was
very
making sure
so.
I didn't speak too much when I went to Old Trafford, because I didn't want any alignment with the Glazers.
Yes, they are still very very unpopular there. The sort of protests in the ground that were very passionate sort of 9-10 years ago have returned this season, certainly over Christmas and in January. There was vociferous chants against their ownership within the ground as well. They've kind of calmed down during the good run of performances, but just below the surface, it's not far away that there is still very much an anti-Glazer sentiment there, and there is still a lot of dissatisfaction with the owners.
Tyrone, you know, as being someone who's from Shrewsbury, do you get the sense that local Mancunians are sometimes upset at how these two clubs have become sort of tourist destinations? Let's face it, I mean, there are people from all over the world coming. Has that kind of cut the common Manchester Mancurian out from going to a lot of these games? And is there a lot of longing for nostalgia?
A little bit, perhaps, yeah. I think at their heart, they're both still very Mancunian clubs. It's been a problem, or not a problem, but it's been an issue at United for 20 years now that, you know, they've been a worldwide brand. They've attracted a worldwide supporter base, and they're just kind of used to it now. You know that at Old Trafford, every week of the 75,000, a good proportion are going to be there for their first time and on tourist trips and overseas. And it's just the attraction of Manchester United, really, and it's what makes the wheels go round. It's how the club kind of funds itself. It's how they spend on transfers because they are this worldwide brand. Probably a bit different for City, and until recently, they probably didn't have that global appeal or that global fan base. They were very much a Mancunian club and a much smaller overseas supporter base. But obviously, getting Pep on board and the transformation that has occurred over the last decade has changed that. They themselves have a worldwide supporter base now. They're a huge attraction to foreign fans because of the way they play under Pep. So it's kind of something they're probably still getting a bit more used to, while at United, it's something that's become accepted over the last two decades.
What's Pep's future, you think?
Very difficult to say. His contract expires next summer in 2021. This season, he's been absolutely adamant that he will stay until then and that he will see his contract out. That would make it 5 years at the club. He's never spent 5 years at any club before. He has even hinted that he's not against the idea necessarily of staying beyond then, but I think all the reporters that cover this patch would be very surprised if he stayed beyond next summer. But of course, a big part of that future and a big part of City's future at the moment is the unknown over the European ban and the two-year ban and the appeal to that, which we'll get a decision first couple of weeks of July, we think, and a lot will become clearer then. I think even if the ban is upheld, it would be a surprise if Pep left. I think he would still stay for this season. But how that pans out changes an awful lot. And if they are cleared and they're still allowed in Europe, then perhaps there's some hope of convincing him to stay beyond next summer. But I think it would be a big surprise to everyone, I think, if he did stay beyond 2021.
Right, we got a good one with Manchester City taking on Arsenal, one of the first of two games coming back here. What other storylines around that game of interest to you?
It's just going to be interesting to see how both teams fare, really. There's, you know, it's football coming back, but it's almost not as we know it with the lack of atmosphere. There's going to be no fans there. We've obviously got five substitutions, risk of injury. So there's a lot of interest there. Leroy Sané is going to be an interesting one for City. He's been out all season and hasn't played at all. He's expected to leave in the summer, but City have really missed him this season. They've become a bit too predictable going forward without him. He offers a bit of spontaneity and a bit of drive and pace in the final third. And without him, they've just become a bit too easy to defend against at times. So I think he'll make a difference. And it'll be interesting to see the impact he has between now and the end of the season. Because if he has a big impact and then goes to Bayern Munich, it perhaps forces City's hand this summer to try and sign a like-for-like replacement.
Manchester City, speaking to some of the people in other countries when the Bundesliga restarted, even Major League Soccer here in the U.S., which is going to kick off in another couple of weeks. There has been trepidation from players coming back. How's the general thought process of the Premier League player? Are they just raring to go to get back, or are any of them a little cautious about COVID-19?
Yeah, there's been a couple that have been quite cautious. Troy Deeney was one at Watford. I think he's returned to full training now, but at first he was quite cautious. N'Golo Kante as well at Chelsea has only recently returned to training. And mm-hmm. I think he played in, they had a behind closed doors friendly at the weekend, and I think he played in that. But those two have kind of led the way in terms of caution due to health issues. N'Golo Kante's had heart problems before. I think Troy Deeney's son has got some kind of breathing difficulties. So they've both kind of been very, very cautious about it. The Premier League testing has been rigorous. It's been twice a week. I haven't got the exact figures, but there have not been many positive tests. They've been very, very low. There were two last week for the most recent round of testing, and that's with about 1,000 people being tested. So the figures are low. I think there's a belief from players in the protocols that have been put in place that at the training ground and within the friendlies, they've seen how it's going to work. So I think the players believe in those protocols. But I think every league coming back knows that they're only a spate of positive tests or, you know, an issue at a game away from all this being blown out the water again. So I think there's going to be some nervousness, but obviously it's gone relatively seamlessly so far in the Bundesliga. So I think that will give every other league returning belief that it can be done.
Well, the swell of excitement is definitely over here in the States with the return of the Premier League. Any other visible signs in England around it? And, what are people's thoughts on the cutouts in the stadium or Zoom or all these other differing challenges? What are their thoughts that you're getting back?
I think it's just sort of wait and see. There's a real sort of like a kind of a match going fan culture here. The crowds in England are always full houses. You get four divisions that are getting thousands through the gate every week. You know, the fourth division has 5,000-6,000 through the gate at a lot of matches. So there's a real culture of going to games. So there is some disappointment and a lot of disappointment really that the people won't be there. We've seen the cutouts in the Bundesliga, and I think the reaction to that was fairly positive. So clubs are looking at doing things like that and mosaics and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting this weekend to see what clubs are doing and how they're approaching it and fan noise and stuff like that. But I think there's an excitement about watching the games on telly. A lot of them have been made free to air, which has never happened before in the Premier League. It's going to be a first since the league started in 92 that a lot of these games are free to watch. So that's going to be interesting. It's almost been dubbed like a World Cup, really, a domestic World Cup, and that the game's on every day. There's going to be something to watch. And over the summer, it is going to be great to watch. And I think people will really, really get into it. And it's just a shame, really, that the people can't be there. But this is the, as I put it, it's probably the best worst case scenario at the moment.
Couldn't have put it any better, Tyrone. Thank you so much for your time. We're going to let you get back to work. You're going to be a busy man starting, even busier man this week. But at least you got games to write about and get back into.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks for your time.
Great stuff there from Tyrone Marshall. By the way, a note tomorrow when Arsenal takes on City at the Etihad. Remember, Mikel Arteta for 3.5 years, the assistant to Pep Guardiola there. Arteta is still only 38 years old. And there's no doubt so far, in my opinion, he's brought a lot of identity and clarity to Arsenal. But with 10 games to go, if they want the momentum to continue, they got to produce over the last 10 games. And that means they're going to have to dull the sword of Manchester City tomorrow with their passing and movement game. Next 10 games, though, keep an eye on this for Arsenal. It is huge. It is Arteta against his master, who's known him since the age of 15, Pep Guardiola. All right, Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 is brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. You get in an accident, John and his firm are going to cover you. They're going to work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. DaspitLaw.com. When we come back, it's Edafe Mathew from Lagos, Nigeria. We're talking all things Nigerian football, Super Eagles.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.